Report is almost in session.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The Supreme Court opens for business today. 38 cases on the docket. A handful of them will get most of the attention. I mean, they deal with abortion rights and affirmative action. But almost half the cases have a direct impact on big business. For example, companies that wind up in court. Sam Eaton has more.
The two cases businesses are paying the closest attention to are Philip Morris versus Williams and Ledbetter versus Goodyear. The first addresses whether constitutional limits should be imposed on punitive damages. The second deals with how far back in time a plaintiff can reach in seeking discriminatory pay claims. Karen Harned directs the National Federation of Independent Business Legal Foundation. She says the main issue is how far the courts will reach in exposing businesses to costly damage claims.
And for small employers in particular who do not have compliance departments and attorneys on staff, these are the types of issues that can really kill a business.
The point exactly, says Brian Woolman with the consumer watchdog group Public Citizen. He says limiting liability for businesses eases the risk of lawsuits.
What you need is a proper incentive to get the business community to do the right thing. In other words, punitive damages have to be large and they have to be somewhat unpredictable.
Decisions on the case are expected by June. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Stocks fell on Friday, but Wall Street had its best third quarter in almost 9 years. July through September, the Dow gained almost 5%. The S&P 500 climbed more than 5%. The NASDAQ advanced 4%. Oil prices rose a tish today. They're about $63 a barrel. So we have one quarter to go in 2006. Lisa Napoli takes a look at how the economy might close out the year.
The last week of the third quarter saw the Dow zoom higher than it has in 11 years and housing prices tank for the first time in 15 years. As the temperatures chill, the forecast for this fourth quarter is more good news, bad news.
The economy is going to continue to expand.
That's Mark Zandi of Economy.com.
Growth is weak and probably will get a bit weaker as the year comes to a close.
Zandi says blame that weakness on housing, which will continue to drag down economic expansion. But he says most businesses couldn't be in better shape, with the exception, of course, of the automakers and some airlines. As for the holiday season,
Christmas is going to feel merry, but we're not going to be singing the carols with as much gusto as we have in the last few Christmases.
Zandi says expect sales to be up a sturdy 5 or 6%. In New York, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
One industry that's looking at a holly jolly Christmas is the travel biz. Travelocity says right now hotel occupancy rates are running 12% higher for Thanksgiving, 20% higher for Christmas compared to last year. And some analysts think airfares will drop even further by the holidays. This is Marketplace. Around the country this morning, in Washington, D.C., the federal government has sold the rights to land, or I should say air, at D.C.'s Union Station. A developer plans to build a hotel, offices, restaurants, and condos on a platform above the train tracks. It's the first time the government has sold what are known as air rights. Those big mansions in Newport, Rhode Island don't go on the market very often, but one just came up for sale. It was built by the Widener family in the early 1900s. Among the highlights, 5 oceanfront acres and a 10,000-bottle wine cellar. The owner hopes to get at least $10 million. Google just bought a tiny house in Menlo Park, California. It has sentimental value. Google's co-founders rented the garage while they were graduate students at Stanford, and that's where they started the company. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the National Organization for Rare Disorders' mission to identify, treat, and cure overlooked and undertreated health conditions. More at rarediseases.org. By Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by The Economist magazine, which not only tells what's happening each week, but why. The Economist. at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Despite a drop on Friday, the Dow is still within striking distance of its all-time closing high. That was set back in January of 2000. There's been a lot of talk about this record, but Newsweek's Alan Sloan is rather unimpressed.
Its significance, if it has any, is psychological. Because when you say, how is the market doing, everybody tells you about the Dow. Even though I know the Dow really doesn't mean anything, the real thing that means something is the Standard & Poor's 500. The Dow is a much narrower thing than the S&P and is only 30 stocks. So the S&P has more significance. The last time I looked, it was 12% below its all-time high, which it reached in March of 2000.
It's not just that people are looking at the Dow instead of the S&P 500, but even with the Dow, nobody seems to be talking about the inflation factor.
The Dow is now what it was 6.5 years ago. But that was 6.5 years ago, which means, A, you've been sitting around with what we ungraciously call dead money for 6.5 years. B, a dollar is worth less now than it was 6.5 years ago. And C, if stocks had continued to rise at their historic rate for the last 6.5 years, the Dow, which is now around 12,000, would be over 18,000.
One of the reasons that we're talking about this is that September was a pretty good month for Wall Street, and it usually is not. What's been going on, you think?
I don't think it really means anything, except that things are going up. A lot of what goes on Wall Street and in all of these markets is momentum. And when things go up, all sorts of people pile on and run them up higher, all sorts of speculators and the hedge funds and various players. So I'm very wary. And when you ask what are, you know, sort of normal questions that normal people answer in a normal way, I'm uncharacteristically modest.
Okay, Alan, if you can't give me the lowdown on stocks, how about the bond market?
Well, I'll give you the same answer. It depends. Right now, there's a very strange thing going on, which is I can get more on my money market fund, which is around 5%, than I can owning long-term treasury securities, which are around 4.7%. And this doesn't happen very often. For me, since I'm old and skeptical, I'm going to stay at least for now in money market funds. But if we come back and revisit this in a year and money funds are down to, you know, 3.5% and bonds are still hanging in at 4.7%, remember to whack me and tell me that I was wrong.
Well, I'll write it down. All right, Alan, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Scott.
Alan Sloan is the Wall Street editor for Newsweek magazine. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.